Good to see all of you here. Thank you for coming this morning. I know when I got up this morning, it was freezing cold compared to yesterday, so I wasn't too terribly motivated to even get out of bed, much less leave my room and brave walking the hallways here with everything going on and all the action and people to run into and trying to figure out where you're going. So thanks for making the effort. I'm excited about our project. Actually, both of the studies I'll be presenting are different aspects of the same project. The first one is our quantitative results. The next is our qualitative. We did a mixed method study. I'll tell you a little bit about it. I did construct this as two separate presentations in case they got separated from each other, but they're not going to be redundant with each other, except for the second one. I do a little bit of resummary of the results. But I understand most of us remember only about 20% of what we hear. Absolutely amazing. I'm convinced I remember substantially less than that. I don't know about you guys. So my slides are also available for downloading if you're interested in learning more about the study. And shortly, the final report should also be available for distribution. We literally are finishing the final edits to it in the next week or two. So this is hot off the presses. No relationships to disclose. The National Center for Healthcare Leadership, which funded the study, is a nonprofit organization that's dedicated to improving leadership in healthcare. So the objectives for this presentation is I want to share with you what the key findings are. I want to talk a little bit about what we meant by the systems approach, which is the framework that we used for the study, and as well as talk to you about some factors that we believe contribute to sustainable organizational change, as evidenced by the results of our study. Here's our infamous research team. The hardest working person, most key to this, is not the one standing in front of you. The one who worked the hardest, did the most, is Judith Gale. Pick photo at the top. Judith was our diversity coach and executive coach. She worked directly with leadership at our demonstration hospitals, which we called intervention hospitals. She did all the heavy lifting in the project and made things happen. And what Rob Maldonado and I did was design the study itself and measured what happened before and after in the intervention and control sites. Joshua joined our team at the end where we were running out of steam and his help was much needed, and he did the bulk of the statistical analysis over the last 6 months. So that's our team. What's a bit different about our project that got NCHL excited about sponsoring it was we are, to the best of our knowledge, the first project that looked at pre-post assessment of system-wide diversity change initiatives. So instead of looking at just one change, like training or getting more language lines, more interpretive services, we looked at a whole array of change. We measured what was happening before, implemented a whole range of interventions designed by our diversity coach with the hospital leadership, and then measured how are things looking here afterwards on the same array of measures. And we also used a control hospital, which is another difference that made for us the design a bit stronger than we sometimes see in demonstration projects. We also, largely due to funding, drilled down to one nursing unit in the hospital. So in some of our interventions, like training, that in theory could have been done with everybody in the hospital, were not. They were done with staff who were assigned to a particular nursing unit. Reason for that was money. It was just the cost. But it did end up involving quite a few people, and we hoped that that work would cross-pollinate across the organization as a result of the fact that oftentimes if you're assigned as a floor nurse in one unit, you will be working throughout the hospital. Same thing with housekeeping, with nutrition, with the phlebotomists, with all the people who touch patients who did participate actively in our study. Our initial goal was to recruit 3 health systems. However, we did our recruiting right at the onset of the Great Recession. We ended up with 2 health systems who were able to buy into the project. They had to pay something. They got what we estimate if you were to hire an external diversity firm to do the project that Judith did for them. It would probably be in the vicinity of $250,000 from start to finish. They each paid $50,000 to participate, and the rest was funded. Both systems were on the East Coast of the United States. There were, as I mentioned before, 2 systems, 2 hospitals each. We flipped a coin, literally. One hospital in the system became the control. All they did was participate in the assessments, pre and post. They got nothing, no help from us. They did whatever they were going to do on their own. The other hospital became the intervention hospital. That hospital got to work with Judith and a whole array of consultants and trainers that we brought in to work on changing their infrastructure, building a sustainable infrastructure for diversity, looking at their practices, and also a whole variety of training that we did. The demographics in both health systems were similar, predominantly white service areas, in fact, by happenstance, a little bit whiter than the overall national average racial ethnic demographics. Both areas, however, were experiencing increases in religious, ethnic, and racial diversity, as well as other diversity dimensions. Why did NCHL do the project? For the reasons bolded below on this slide. The continuing underrepresentation of women and people of color in leadership and professional positions in healthcare, because of the racial, ethnic, and language disparities that persist in healthcare, and as well as overall quality issues that we all know in this room increase the cost of healthcare and literally put patients' lives at risk. Here are the goals we had for the project. First is develop the infrastructure to sustain change. It's one thing to change something. I do something differently. Someone else shows up. I retire, which will happen soon. And someone else comes in, and they've got another idea. They do something else. That's not sustainable change. Sustainable change is so built into the fabric, into the practices and policies, that it's not dependent on one person. One leader, one individual, 2 people to make it happen. It's the fabric of how the organization operates, and that's the kind of change we were hoping for through this project. We wanted also to implement those learning and OD interventions, including coaching, thus Judith Gale, the one who did the work in this project, and then we wanted to measure the performance. And we wanted to look at performance at the systems level, but also at the individual level. Did people change personally? Because I think all the years that we have of research in the area of diversity show, unless that personal change happens, unless I can see how my thinking, my beliefs, my biases impact on what I think is important and what I even see, that sustainable change is not going to happen, because I'm going to keep doing what I do, and it's going to keep producing what it produces until I'm capable of seeing things differently. This is actually the model that we used, a little push from my book here, which is downstairs in PubMart in Wiley, but actually the model for my book is the same model that we, research-based model that we used to design the project. If you look in the left-hand corner of the diagram, you'll see that's where everything starts, with the leadership, with the C-suite. And are they or are they not diversity sensitive? Do they believe that customer diversity and staff diversity are important and make a difference, or don't they? Because based on what they believe, previous research I've been involved in says, as well as others' research, they will or will not engage in diversity strategy. If you don't strategize for diversity, you don't look in depth at all those components of diversity management that are in the center. Workforce diversity, the policies, and the practices in the organization. If you don't do that and you don't tool them to best practices in a comprehensive way, you're not developing a culture and a climate that fosters inclusion. If you don't foster inclusion, you're going to find yourself with a staff that have less commitment to the organization, that aren't as satisfied, and that don't perceive the climate and the culture as supportive of them and of their goals. And as a consequence of that, your organizational performance on those all-important outcome measures like patient satisfaction, patient outcomes, are not going to improve. And so there you have it. This is the actual flow diagram for the project itself. If you add up all these 3 months, 18 months, and that, you get just about 2.5 years. That was optimistic. About 3 years into the project, I was saying, if this goes on much longer, I'm going to be retired before we finish this thing. Well, it went on for 7 years from when we first started to recruit to when we actually engaged. And in fact, this part of the project lasted about 5 years. So it lasted about almost twice as long as we thought that it would. And in large part because of competing priorities and changes that were happening within both health systems that kind of created a stop-start. And in my next presentation, I'll talk a little bit about how the executives wrangled with that and how challenging it was for them to maintain this diversity project as a priority in the context of the ever-changing environment and competing priorities they found themselves facing. So we started out with doing a lot of pre-assessments in a mixed methods approach. We measured at the organizational and individual levels. We did some interviews and focus groups, and we did that in large part to inform step three here, the organizational level action plan. Each one of these organizations, after they got their assessment results through the feedback and consultation, they looked specifically at how they performed relative to best practices as measured by this array of instruments, and they decided, here's what we're going to do. They created their own blueprint for success. This is what we agree to change. Here's who's going to do it. Here's how it's going to be done. So all those elements of a successful action plan. They also created personal action plans, the executives. And that's where Judith Gale worked as an executive coach. They got their own individual level information. They learned a little bit more about the implicit biases that they had. And they got them because we've all got them. We all have implicit biases. They learned the results of their discovering diversity profile. They learned their racial identity status, the lens through which they see and experience race and ethnicity in their lives, and they decided whether or not that was working for them. And if it wasn't and they wanted to make some change, which our executives did, they worked with Judith to create a personal action plan to help make that happen. We did then those series of interventions and then followed by post-assessments and then followed by the post-intervention feedback. Right now we're finishing up the final report. So this slide just shows the actual timeline of the project, which you can see is just about 5 years for each of our health systems. And that doesn't count the time that we spent recruiting hospitals in the beginning, which we thought would be easy, giving $250,000 worth of services. You laugh. You must have experience with this, too. We thought, oh, this, you know, $50,000, you get something. That's 20% of what you pay retail. No. It still was challenging to get buy-in to this project. So here are the organizational level competencies that we measured. Each one of these competencies there's a strong evidence base for. We know what the best practices are. We also know that we don't consistently engage in them in hospitals. We looked at diversity leadership, strategic human resource management, organizational climate, diversity climate, patient cultural competency. In the middle, you'll see the instruments that we used, most of which are publicly available, some of which are proprietary. the Organizational Climate Survey is a proprietary instrument owned by the Hay Group. And in fact, that's the only one that we did not do at both the hospitals. And the reason, the control and the intervention, and that was, again, because of cost. The rest of them, lots of instruments, not as expensive as you'd think. At the individual level, with all the executives, everybody on the nursing units, these are the measures that we used, all of which are relatively easily accessible instruments. We also looked at organizational outcomes. We tried to go beyond the EEO1 and the HCAHPS reports, and we had difficulty getting the data. That tells me that we're still not looking much at outcomes, as we should, at the healthcare, in the hospital healthcare delivery level. So what did we find? This slide summarizes the hypotheses, and you can see the dark green, strong support, light green signifies partial support, red, not supported. So you can see of our 8 hypotheses, other than 1A and 3A, they were all supported or partially supported. That means the intervention hospitals outperformed the respective control hospitals within their own systems in all of these different dimensions of diversity management at the organizational level. So this systems approach made a difference. And in terms of inpatient experiences of care, there were mixed results that I'll talk about a little bit later. In addition to these quantitative measures, our coach and the leadership team also took a look at how did they do implementing their action plans. Did they really make the change that they wanted to see? They designed actions around these same categories of or domains of planning in which there are known organizational level competencies. And you can see here, and here's the summary of how they changed. Intervention Hospital X, you could tell by the color in the previous graph, they've got a lot more green, especially in the post column. That green means success. They were more successful than Intervention Hospital Y. They improved 8 of the 11 domains pre-post. None of those domains declined. In Intervention Hospital Y, they had a bit less success. In my next presentation, I'll talk a little bit more about why we think that happened. We also looked at their websites, because your website speaks to who you are. It's your way of selling yourself, not like your Facebook page. You get a sense of what people are listening, who we want to present ourselves as. Look at my nephews. I know what he's interested in. I know he likes snowboarding and videography. Anyone who looked at it would know, wouldn't have to know Jeff to have a notion of that. And the hospitals, neither one of them met the essential criterion, and that's having a link to diversity information within one click of the homepage. So that's something that we're encouraging them to do. The challenge, why'd that happen? It's the systems website. And we focused on the hospital level, and it turned out that some of the essential elements of infrastructure, particularly the website, was controlled by the system. We actually purposefully did not involve systems executives because we thought if we did, that would kind of muddy the water and we might have too much change in the control hospital too and look like we didn't have any success. But in retrospect, I'd do that differently next time around. We had some contradictory findings. Hospital Health System X did experience more success, but the gap actually widened between ideal and actual climate. Maybe expectations were raised. And this is the climate created by each of the executives for their respective direct reports. And when you see a gap between what the direct reports want and ideally and what they feel they're actually experiencing, there you got some little conflict going on there. And so maybe it was just simply a matter of raised expectations. Who knows? The HCAHPS, or patient satisfaction scores, actually declined at Intervention Hospital X. We can't explain that. We have no idea why that happened. Maybe there was an unknown intervening variable that resulted in that. Maybe if we'd had scores specific to the intervention unit that we worked with directly, maybe that would have been different, but that was another data problem that we couldn't address. Racial identity status was another interesting one. For the white staff and leadership, their identities actually devolved to lower level statuses, less sophisticated ways of looking at race and ethnicity in the course of the project. But for African Americans, there were not enough people of color of other ethnicities to use the third instrument that's available to look at identity status. We saw an evolution to more sophisticated identity status. So in conclusions, the findings actually support the systems approach, focused and systematic approach, supports the idea of using metrics and feedback to drive change, really reinforce the importance of individual growth and development, especially in leadership. And the big lesson we learned is that more than the support to pay for the project, we needed to bring those systems level executives into the process. So I think I've mentioned all of these already, the changes that we need to have. We thought that the strengths of our project as it was designed was the mixed methods approach and having matched control hospitals. Questions I don't think we have time for, but we will after the next presentation.